Hello again, I'm Matt, and welcome to Matt on Wax. I can't speak for every young athlete, but I do think it's many players' dream to win a championship. It's true, winning is fun and losing can be tough. While we all dream one day lifting the banner, holding the trophy, and basking in the glow of getting the win, I think it takes a lot of work, commitment, dedication, skill, and a touch of luck to be a champion. And a few know that better than today's guest. He's been to the title bout, and what mattered the most, CJ Cosabile delivered, and has done so time and time again. CJ has had many moments in the winner's circle, as he won a championship at every level, a state title in high school, the NCAA with Duke, and then the pro game with the MLL and with the Bayhawks, and then the PLL with the Chaos. There are few players in the history of the sport who can match his achievements on the field. While getting there hasn't been easy, as you'll soon hear, each style chase has only fueled his fire and the passion for the game. So, what does it take to be a champion? Well, here's the guy to ask. Please welcome my friend, CJ Cosabile. Hi, CJ. Thank you for joining me today, and welcome to Matt on Lax. Before we get started, I want to ask you, when did Craig James become CJ? And does your family call you CJ or Craig?
So it's CJ. Not many people actually know that my real name is Craig James. The only time I actually got called that was the first day of school, and my mom yelled at me. But ultimately, my parents wanted to call me CJ, and they filled in the blanks.
With that all cleared up, I usually like to start at the beginning. How did you start playing lacrosse?
Yeah, so when I look back, I was very fortunate where my parents allowed my brother and I to play, pretty much every sport that we wanted to. Growing up, I played football, baseball, basketball, soccer, hockey. And the way I found lacrosse was I got bored playing baseball. When kids started pitching, games lasted 3+ hours. And unless you were the catcher or pitcher, I just didn't have the attention span for it. So I found lacrosse in fourth grade.
When did lacrosse become your main sport?
So it's interesting, right? Because it's changed dramatically since I started playing. Like when I was growing up, it was very about being a multi-sport athlete. So my predominant sports growing up were hockey, football, and lacrosse. But I'd say where things got really serious was probably in eighth grade for me.
Mm-hmm. You were from New Fairfield, Connecticut. What was a lacrosse program like for you growing up?
It was interesting, right? I mean, when you think about Connecticut lacrosse as a whole, if you're not from four towns, Greenwich, Wilton, New Canaan, and Darien, are you really playing lacrosse in the state? And I was very blessed to have Coach Marty Morgan, who basically started a lacrosse program within the town. And my group of friends were actually the first group of kids who basically went from the youth of the program to third, fourth grade, and then all the way saw it through to high school, where we actually won a state championship there. When I look at my town, it's very small. It's the 15,000. Each high school class is about 250 kids. Are the most famous athlete to come out of New Fairfield, Connecticut, would be Jennifer Rosati, who led UConn basketball to their first national championships in women's.
Did you start playing as a midfielder, or were you always a midfielder?
When you're young, right, you play a lot of different positions at the end of the day. I did gravitate towards defense at an early age. So fifth grade is actually when I picked up my first long pole. I attempted to maneuver with a 6-foot pole, but when you're, a little over 4 feet, it's a little challenging. So cut that down to 5 feet. But I've also played attack before, midfield. I've tried my luck at goalie from time to time. That's actually the path that my brother ended up choosing. But I've always gravitated towards the long stick.
So how did you start taking faceoffs?
Out of necessity, all honesty, had a lot of things happen. So I really started taking face-offs in high school, my freshman year in high school, where somebody needed to do the job. The face-off game, especially back then, it's less technical than what it is now, where a lot of it was more a battle of willpower. Who wanted that ball more? I started doing that in high school, and then I didn't expect to be taking them in college, to be perfectly honest with you, or in the pro level from time to time.
While at New Fairfield, you won a state title with the Rebels in 2008. What was that experience like?
you know, when you look back at that, you know, state championship, you know, being a town that doesn't win a lot of sports, doing it with all your friends that you've grown up with is a very unique experience, right? Meaning, like I said earlier, where all my friends, we started playing lacrosse together in third and fourth grade, right? So again, there's a lot of years, there's a lot of highs and lows. And, you know, to do that with people that you're, you know, you grew up with is tremendous, you know, because again, that's, you know, when you think about, you know, high school athletics, I mean, that's the pinnacle of it all. To do it with your best friends, to give a coach like Marty Morgan, who dedicates so much time to the town, to the kids. I mean, he was coaching three or four teams on top of the high school team for that. So to have that moment with him and allow all this hard work pay off, you know, those are the memories that you're always going to have.
From New Fairfield, you were off to play at Duke. Tell us about the experience going from high school to a program like Duke.
You know, it's a lot, right? You know, I went from playing at New Fairfield High School, which, you know, when I look at back, I mean, you know, the talent was okay. It helped me develop as a player, because if you weren't throwing perfect passes to people, you know, like in the box, you know, the likelihood of getting caught was 50-50, so to speak. You know, it's interesting for me where my avenue to attend Duke University was really driven through these summer programs, which obviously now dominate the sport of lacrosse, right? Playing for club teams, if you will. And, you know, when I look at Duke, right, I mean, for me, sport of lacrosse was always, I always had a chip on my shoulder. I always wanted to prove that I could play, that I could compete with the best. And that's something that Duke offered me and why I got very excited to go to Duke University. The fact that everybody there is an All-American, All-State, All-County, what have you will, and you get to compete not only with your teammates being the best, but when you think about ACC lacrosse, you know, playing Virginia, UNC, Maryland at the time, you know, there was no higher level of playing the game in the ACC.
What was it like to play for Coach Stanowski?
It was awesome. I mean, you think about at that level, right? All coaches know X's and O's at the end of the day. But the brilliance of Coach Dino is that his ability to develop and understand the journey when it comes to building a championship team. You know, I was very blessed to be part of teams where we went to, so my college career, four Final Fours, two ACC championships, and a national championship. And every journey was different. There's highs and lows along the way. And it's always funny because, you know, at Duke, we would always start very bad, you know, where we'd lose a couple of games that we probably shouldn't have. Coach Dino would have us buy into the system and trust him to put us in the right place. And we usually went on, you know, runs, you know, we maybe potentially lose one game, you know, towards the tail end of the career. But like I said, we were able to make it to four Final Fours. And most guys can't say that, that's for sure.
In 2010, your legendary overtime goal against Notre Dame brought home Duke's first NCAA title. At that time, you were a sophomore. How did that moment in that season affect you as a player?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty dope. you know, when you think about, like, when you think about lacrosse, I mean, there was, you know, to be able to have a moment on that stage, you know, is everything. You know, when you really think about the pinnacle of lacrosse, it's college. And I'll say this, is that I think Mike and Paul Rabel have done a tremendous job of bringing up the pro game. But when you think about lacrosse and when you're actually fully dedicated to it, right? I mean, you're spending 4 or 5 hours a day, 6 days a week in the sport. And people don't realize it. Lacrosse is, in college, is a two-season sport, right? You have your fall ball and then you have your spring ball. So, you know, all this starts in August, right? It's a grind. And I love lacrosse. And, you know, there are times where you sit there like, wow, this is a lot. And, you know, when I look back at that moment, I mean, Final Four weekend, you know, you got to play in front of, in these NFL stadiums, in front of 55,000 people. You know, that game was about 35,000 or so. And to have that moment in time, you know, for myself, for my teammates, and then just also the program. You think about the legacy, you know, that happened prior. You know, all the guys who drew a short straw, dude, that was out of their control, and to kind of cap off, you know, some of, you know, the guys who went through things like in 2006 and to leave, you know, leave with a national championship. I mean, you had a lot of guys who stayed there for 5 years. Some guys who didn't even play, but they ended on a winning note. And a lot of guys can't say that. Really cool.
Have you and goalie Scotty Rogers ever talked about that moment?
Scotty Rogers? Absolutely. You know, Scotty is a great guy. You know, you got to give him a lot of credit. You know, I look back at the game, you know, I mean, you look at that tournament as a whole. I mean, he kept Notre Dame in that game. The amount of saves that he made with his tree trunks of legs, you know, stood on his head. I mean, you can't root against the guy. And he's just a genuine guy. I like to have fun with him from time to time. You know, he's he can bust his chops a little bit from time to time. But, you know, yeah, no, we've talked about it before, to say the least.
From Duke, you were off to the MLL to play for the Lizards, then to the BayHawks, where once again you won a championship. What was it like to play in the MLL at that time?
You know, the MLL, it's interesting, right? Because when you look at the MLL and the development of it, you know, my life changed a little bit because I was focused on other things during my time in the MLL, you know, where you're focusing on other careers. You know, because the thing is with lacrosse, when you think about it, not a lot of guys were making, when I first came out of college, you're not making a living playing the sport. You know, the whole concept and idea, you know, those NCAA commercials, go pro in something other than sports, you know, it's pretty prevalent in the sport of lacrosse that, you know, a lot of individuals are, you know, I'd say working in some sort of jobs, whether it's finance, lawyers, or other corporate opportunities. And the transition towards the tail end has been pretty cool as far as you now have more guys in the league in the MLL, as well as now the PLL, that are full-time in the sport. And that's going to make for a much better product, you know, meaning that they're coaching, giving lessons. And, you know, it's, I mean, when you look at that championship, you know, going back in the MLL 2018, right, with the BayHawks, you know, all these championships, they have different highs and lows, different difficulties that you have to combat, right? You know, as an example, when you think about the MLL, you know, you only get to practice once a week, then you play once a week, right? So a lot of the onus is on yourself to get your body ready and be prepared. And, you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, life does get in the way for some guys, but I was very fortunate, you know, to be with the ownership group with BK, Brian Kelly, where he supported us in all aspects, you know, gave us everything that we needed. Didn't realize I would like Maryland Terrapins as much as I do. Great group of guys, but you had a great core nucleus. And the fact that we went through some struggles throughout the years, not making the playoffs and to cap it off with the championship out in Denver against the Outlaws. Yeah, man, that's what it's about, right? Winning's fun.
When the MLL merged with the PLL, you found your spot in the chaos. What has the experience been like in the PLL?
Yeah, so, I mean, for me, right, you know, it was a little bit of a challenging road, in all honesty. You know, when you look at the expansion draft for the PLL, when the MLL folded, you know, my name wasn't selected. You know, I made one phone call to Tim Sudan, who is the coach for the Chrome, to see, you know, what happened exactly. Am I, you know, just not a good player, this and that. Talked to him, you know, he had his guys. He actually gave me a call the last day before you can make roster moves for training camp, brought me in saying that, you know, he likely wasn't going to take me because he has his people, but maybe somebody picks you up. So I'm like, all right, appreciate the opportunity. You know, went to training camp, ended up, you know, obviously not getting picked up. And, you know, a couple of weeks go by and, you know, 3-4 weeks in, not getting a phone call, no, nothing, anything. You know, I thought I was retired, in all honesty. I was in the Maldives with my girlfriend, you know, enjoying my retirement. And lo and behold, as I'm about to leave the island in the airport, I get a text from Coach Towers being like, hey, you know, did you hear that we picked you up? And, you know, I gave him a call, you know, he kind of said the same exact thing. And I said, no, I didn't, you know, kind of a way. He goes, well, here's the deal. Like, you know, if, you know, XYZ happens, you know, we want to bring you in for an opportunity to play. And, you know, lo and behold, that, you know, the Sunday after, our, you know, the next week, that Monday after the game, he gives me a call like, hey, you want to play in Long Island for us? And I'm like, absolutely, no questions asked. And, you know, to be part of that team and be part of the, you know, turnaround. I mean, you know, the team, I don't think they were 0 for maybe like 1-4 in the first half of the year at the end of the day. And I think we only ended up losing 2 games moving forward after that, which was very cool. And then obviously bringing home a championship that year.
Talking about Coach Towers, Coach Towers has a big personality and is a true force of nature. How is it playing for him?
You are correct about the true force of nature. Everything there is absolutely factual. I will say this, tough lessons learned for myself is you got to worry about the forearm shiver that Coach Towers gives you when you come off the field when he's in excitement. So you know, most people just give like a nice casual dap up. He's more of a dap, and then he'll throw his throw his forearm right into your sternum. And most guys aren't wearing shoulder pads, so you got to watch out for that because he's a big man with a lot of energy. Honestly, one of my favorite guys to play for. And a lot of that also to do, I mean, not only with his personality and his energy, but also just the honesty and transparency that he has. You know, his ability to be willing to have difficult conversations with guys and explain to them, this is my thought process, this is the reason why, you know, you're playing or you're not playing. Where sometimes some guys hide away from that as a coaching staff. It's not the pleasant part of your job, but so that's something you have to have. You know, you have to be honest and open with people so they know what they can correct. And I have difficulty trying to figure out if I could play for anybody else in the pro ranks. In all honesty,
you've been a key player on this team, holding down many different roles. You're a defender, but also a shooter, and you're also taking faceoffs. Do you prefer one role more than another?
I prefer so for me. I mean, versatility has always been a part of the game. Right. You want to be a Swiss Army knife, especially when you have 19 man rosters. Right. If you can do multiple roles, you know, the chances of you making a roster spot are much greater. For me, I've always enjoyed the transition aspect of it, you know, in between the lines. So meaning, you know, picking up, you know, gritty ground balls in the middle of the field and then turning that into something positive on the offensive side. You know, whether getting assists or scoring your goal, like that's what gets people excited at the end of the day for lacrosse games. People like transition, right? They like gritty plays. You know, want somebody who's going to be selling out for that ground ball. That's kind of the most fun aspect of it. I mean, that, you know, you look at the position, you know, being a long stick midi, you know, I feel like it's the best thing, best of both worlds where you know, you get to beat somebody up with a 6-foot metal pipe and, you know, you get to go run down and score it in their face. So,
there's been an evolution in the faceoffs over the years due to the rule changes and different training styles, like knee down to standing neutral grip. Has this changed how you view the position?
For me, no. What I realized, though, is you have more head cases and guys who are specialists in the field. Now, it's a very interesting position, right, where I always used to think the goalies were the craziest people in the world. I think the face-off guys are more a little bit more off, so to speak. Now, it's a position that has, I mean, you think about the face-off position, right? There's just so many eyes on it. It's very obvious. But, you know, at the end of the day, right, face-off games 3-on-3. But what people really look at is the battle between guys in the middle, 1-on-1. It's a lot of eyes, a lot of pressure, on that position to be successful. And then you have dominant guy, like, and then when you have someone who's dominant, you know, that's a huge advantage, right? Because at the end of the day, what we used to always talk about, especially at schools, college is, you know, win the ground ball war, right? Face-off is the disguised ground ball at the end of the day. For me, it hasn't changed too much of what I do, in all honesty, the pro game, obviously, because that pro game still has the knee down. I mean, for me, when I was a face-off guy, knee down wasn't a thing. The type of moves that are usable has changed, right? A lot of things now are more plunger related, where I used to be a big jammer back in the day. So where you basically, so you think about face-off game, it was more, you had 3 moves, right? You had clamp, you jump, and then you had the rake, right? So that was kind of like the rock, paper, scissors, shoot game that would go on. But the way now it's stick development designed specifically for that position, you know, plunging in some capacities usually tends to be the best maneuver for it. And again, when you think about low man winning the battle, like being on a knee is like very helpful at the end of the day. So, you know, I always was a stand-up person. I was never a motorcycle grip person. I was regular. So, you know, a lot of these rules do, you know, the pro game hasn't implemented a lot of these new rule changes, right? But when you think about the rules that are being implemented, the idea here is to have less tie-ups, right? They want to get the ball out as soon as possible. So for me, I'm all about that. Because the grand thing, like when I look back at my collegiate, you know, face-off record, it's okay. But what they don't show in the stats, because you know, when you think about face-offs, right, they count once you get possession of the ball as a win. I would consider, and what we did at Duke consider, is that that's not the case. You need to get the ball into your offensive end for actually being possession. So you want to be above 50% on those initial, but the idea is to get yourself up to 65% by having turnovers within the middle of the field. So for me, being a long pole, where you all of a sudden get to go these guys who all they do is train on faceoffs and their hand speed, but may not work on ground balls, to be able to go out there and basically whack them up and give them pressure that they're able to experience, you know, it's a nice little advantage. And that's why I think I get thrown out there from time to time.
And once again, last year, you won a PLL championship. How's it feel to have won at every level of the game? High school, college, MLL, and PLL. Has one been more meaningful to you?
You know, that's a very interesting question, right? Because all of them have unique circumstances that are to them. You know, I mean, college, I'd say, sticks out the most just because of how much time that you have to dedicate to it. And when you think about, you know, that 40-plus man roster, the guys that you're with, I mean, you're doing everything with them from, you know, eating, going to class, going out, going to the weight room, training room, practicing. Like, there's just so much that goes into it. But, you know, I look at, like, the PLL championship last year. It's such vindication. You know, I went from a guy who went undrafted to, you know, guy who thought he was retired to playing for the best outdoor professional team in the world. You know, like, you know, perseverance. You know, I've been very blessed and very fortunate to accomplish so much on, you know, as, you know, and team wise, as well as an individual. And, you know, to sit there and say that, you know, what have you done for me lately? Doesn't really matter anymore. And then to be able to be vindicated by able to be at the top of the mountain again. It's, you know, awesome.
In 2022, you once found yourself again in the championship game. Although KS didn't retain the title, what was the experience like going into the playoffs?
Oh, man, I wish we had a better segue, man. This would have been a nice W if we had that one. This is the beauty of sports at the end of the day. You know, when I look back on this season, to sit here and to be very honest with you, I was very surprised that we were able to make it as far as we did. You know, I look back in, you know, the regular season, I didn't see any catalyst for us to take over. You know, the year before, the team had this swagger and arrogance, right? There's a very thin line between that and being cocky, right, at the end of the day. And you could see stuff building and being put together, where at the end of the season, you know, we kind of puttered on into the postseason. But the focus that we brought in those first two games and that swagger and arrogance that I saw that we had from the year before, you know, really carried itself. You know, I look at, you know, the final result, you know, a couple different plays, you know, myself, shot that got saved. You know, if we had a couple less turnovers here and there, if we helped Max Atler on the faceoff a little bit more from the wings and got a couple of ground balls, you know, it could be a completely different ball game. But, you know, that's the beauty of sports. There's winners and losers. And, you know, how do you respond from that? How do you respond from that adversity? You know, from, you know, the guys that I moved to the locker room, you know, guys have already moved on. You know, we're ready for 2023 to take back the crown.
Yeah. Have you ever considered playing the box game?
I've been thinking about it more and more. So I actually, out of college, I played it for a couple of years in Philadelphia. It's so different. It's funny because you see so many players make the transition from indoor to outdoor, but the transition from outdoor to indoor is so much more difficult. Now, especially for Americans on the offensive side coming out the front door, you know, the skill set that's required, the windows that you're taught to throw into are very different. Now, you also have this understanding that, you know, when you shoot the ball, your target actually may not be visible. You have to think about it from the sense that your stick has eyes that you don't. So meaning, like, if you're looking like right here, your stick's looking over here. So it's a different angle. But my when I indoors, so much fun. When you really like, you know, when you play on the defensive side, anything that comes across your face, you can cross check at will. The crowds are fantastic. I mean, I had the pleasure of playing, you know, at the ACC Center where the Toronto Maple Leafs play in the Raptors. Now you're getting 16, 17,000 people there. You go to where the Buffalo Bandits play, the Niagara Center, right? You get up there as well. My favorite place I ever got to play indoors is the Pepsi where the Mammoth play. And I mean, that place was rocking, 18,000 people. And like, when you think about it, you know, when you're indoors, the sound gets trapped. So the energy and atmosphere in those arenas are electric. So yeah, this is a tough battle that I'm contemplating, seeing if I want to try to, you know, because I'm a little bit more established in my, you know, career, that I'm seriously contemplating. So we'll see what happens.
Many of our audience are young and upcoming athletes. What is the most important skill for a young player to develop or work on?
The most important skill to develop, you know, you got to take into account the fundamentals, right? In the sense of that your stick needs to basically be an extension of yourself in terms of being able to pick ground balls, catching and throwing. You know, growing up for me, I always had a stick in my hand. I'm not saying that you have to play lacrosse constantly, but I remember, you know, in the house, like I'd be with my fiddlestick, I'd be like walking up the stairs, you know, dodging the railings or dodging corners of the walls of my house, you know, and, you know, trying different things as well, you know, going in the backyard or, you know, going up to the high school, shooting the ball around, learning how to throw behind the back or around the world just to bolster your capabilities. And, you know, for me, you know, the other thing is you just have to have the desire and drive to do it, right? You know, the thing is, like, for me, like, I was very fortunate where if I said yes and I wanted to do something, my parents were willing to drive me, you know, across country if they had to, you know, to facilitate that. You know, you have to make sacrifices. You have to, you know, sometimes not hang out with your friends at the pool, you know, to get better. You know, again, if that's what you want, you know, and when I look back, I wouldn't change anything in that regard. But, you know, if you want to be great, you know, I think we live in this society of instant gratification. You know, people see Instagrams and the TikToks and think that this stuff just happens, and it doesn't. There's just so much hours that go behind those moments, and you have to put in the work if you want to make it to that next step or take your game to the next level.
Many young athletes struggle with self-confidence. How and when did you develop your confidence as a player?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's always a fire that you have to have internally. I mean, something you develop in sense that, you know, you just have to have this fire that you essentially want to beat the other person across from you. Or you have to have this confidence, you know, this, I go back to swagger and arrogance, that you are a competitor and that you're going to win this battle. You know, like a funny moment for my life, you know, just, I guess, how maybe overly competitive I did a lacrosse camp with Casey Powell, who 4-time All-American at Syracuse, all-time great, all-time leading scorer professionally, played indoor, outdoor, Hall of Famer, was actually inducted to the first PLL Hall of Fame class. And it was funny because, you know, I told him I want to go one-on-one with him. He agreed to do it after, you know, after the camp. And then lo and behold, the venue that we were in had some other thing going on right after, so we were able to do it. And I remember I was crying on my way home thinking that I was actually going to take this guy's cookies, you know, being a 12-year-old kid and, you know, being, you know, in the prime of his professional career at the time. So, you know, you have to have this belief in yourself that you are going to be successful, because if you don't, you've already lost that battle.
Yeah. It's clear you're a competitive person. Where do you get your competitive edge?
Probably from my mom, in all honesty. I say my dad's more of a Gandhi kind of guy. He was always trying to reel that in. You know, but my mom used to play softball back in the day. She used to go with all her friends, you know, go to her games, watch. She wore the number 9. That's the reason why I wear my number. This is what my mom used to wear. And, you know, also growing up, I played against a lot of older kids. You know, I was a younger one. So when you play, you know, football in the backyard, grew up in a condominium or playing any other game, you know, when you're a small guy, you know, you're gonna get beat up a little bit, but you know, in the long term, I do think that pays dividends later down in life.
Do you get nervous before your games?
It's interesting you say that. Not as much as I want to, in all honesty, because nerves are a good thing. Because nerves mean something that you, there's something for you to lose at the end of the day. So like when I think about like my professional career, like right now, you know, the games that you're nervous about are more, I'd say, the playoff games. Like in college, it was probably more consistent. But if you're not nervous, that means it doesn't really matter to you. But the thing is how do you control those nerves? Does that make you excited? Like for me, like I love when things are down, when the chips are down, your back's against the wall. How do you respond? Right. You know, meaning if you're down, you know, you're down a goal, you know, all right, I'm taking the face off. All right. I'm going to do everything in my power to win this ball. All right. We're in overtime. We need to get this ball. I'm going to do like, that's the onus that you want to take on, right? You want to be the guy that takes that last shot.
How important is a mental game in the development of a young athlete?
Oh, it's huge, right? I mean, you look at how many players who don't make it because of their inability to control the mental aspects of the game. You know, a big element to, you know, the mental part of it is just being prepared, right? So how do you do that, right? You do that by practicing a lot, understanding what you're capable of, you know, what you're not, you know, analyzing film of your opponent. But if you're prepared, you know, all those other things, you know, should fall away to the wayside. Right. So it's a huge aspect, you know, that, you know, people focus a lot on just the physical, you know, catching, throwing, all that. At the same time as you do have to work your mind in preparation for, you know, playing.
What do you know now about lacrosse that you wish you knew when you were younger?
That's a good one, Matt. That's a very good one. You know, the fact that lacrosse was going to turn into what it was going to turn into, in the sense that you got to have guys that are full time into it. Now, looking back, I think I may would have done some different things career wise, or maybe I would have been full time in the sport for a little bit. You know, like as an example, you know, I had an opportunity to coach high school out in California and do an appraisal job. And I just didn't take it because I didn't think, you know, it made sense for my career. Didn't want to be away from my family. But, you know, when you think about, you know, as you get older, the years matter less. And, you know, a year out in Southern California wouldn't have been the worst things for me.
In your opinion, what makes a good coach?
You know, a good coach is someone who is, I say, just very honest and also adaptive, right? Where you have to be honest with your players, telling them what they're good at, but I think equally as important, what they're bad at, and get the most out of them in that regard. And I think you also have to be adaptive in terms of your strategies and how to get the most out of somebody. Because not every athlete is going to respond the same way from, you know, specific coaching style. Those would be, I say, the two of the biggest things. X's and O's come. You know, at the end of the day, all guys know those.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what makes a good player?
Good player is a great teammate, right? Where, you know, thing is this is, you, in order to be a great player, you have to make the people around you better, right? Are you helping the team's mission to, you know, be successful? You know, a guy who's, you know, worried about his stats, where he goes, you know, 3-4, yet the team lost, and, you know, he dodged 20 times is not, to me, not, you know, a good player, right? How can you get the most out of your teammates? Is that you being a vocal leader, or is that somebody who's, you know, leading by example, doing the gritty things, you know, leading from the front, so to speak? But I'd say those are the characteristics, you know, that I see and admire in what I would consider somebody to be a great player or a good player.
Mm-hmm. What motivates you today as you continue to play?
You know, a lot of it has to do just proving people wrong. You know, the fact of the matter is this, is that, I mean, that's how I started, you know, having this chip on my shoulder, you know, feeling like that because of where I'm from, you know, didn't get proper respect for my playing abilities. You know, you look at a lot of things, unfortunately, things are political, you know, looking back, things are political because coaches look out for their guys. But at the end of the day, the beauty of sports is it's very obvious if somebody has it or somebody don't. For me, my career has been reinvigorated by the fact that, you know, people counted me out, right? Like I said, I was out of a job. I thought I was done playing professional lacrosse. Have a championship. I'd rather have two championships. I was very fortunate to be nominated, LSM of the year. Michael Earhart's a stud. But to be kind of considered in those rankings when, like I said, thought I was done, it's cool.
CJ, now it's time for a video question. Here's Jake.
Hi, CJ. I'm Jake. I'm 12 years old and I just started playing long pole. What's the right length for my stick? Should I cut it or does it go by my height?
So I would say you got to cut it. Yeah. I mean, listen, at 12 years old, you're probably sub 6 feet, right? So 12 years old, what grade does that put people in nowadays?
Seventh grade.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're probably at a point where like five and a half at the high end. It also depends on size though, too. I remember back in the day, we had some freakishly large kids at 12 years old who were 6 foot, where it makes sense. But if you're running around tripping over your stick, absolutely cut it a little bit. Don't cut the really nice ones. Maybe buy a used one. I played against sports, something along those lines, make sure that you're able to handle it. But yeah, that'd be my advice.
Yeah. Do you enjoy any hobbies outside lacrosse?
Absolutely. You have to have a life outside the sport. For me, it is traveling. So my girlfriend and I do extensive traveling in the off season. We try to visit 3 to 5 countries each year. So we've been dating now for about 3 years. So we've done about 12, 15, 14 countries. I've done about 35 countries on my own.
Wow. After all you've achieved on and off the field, what would a fan find surprising to learn about CJ Constabile?
Fan surprising? I don't know. I try to be open and transparent in all honesty. What are people surprised of? Oof. I got nothing on this one, Matt. I mean, all honesty, that's a stumper. It usually doesn't happen for me, though. I'll say that.
Uh-huh. But I heard you are a bitch.
Actually, I'll take a step back, Matt. You know what's actually surprising to most people? Mm-hmm. My real name's Craig. That's actually usually one. So funny fact about that, because usually that doesn't come out. It's usually for me, my single days was a bar trick to talk to girls at times. But it's funny because most guys don't know it. So like when people find out, like practice, or they see my ID randomly, they'll start calling me Craig. So if we're doing like line drills, they'll be like, oh, one more Craig, stuff like that. Like Chad Wiedemeyer played at Princeton back today. Love that. Dan Burns, love that as well. So yeah, that's usually a good one.
I did hear though, you are a big Formula One racing fan. Is that true?
This is factual. Yes. Yes. So I Drive to Survive got me hooked on Formula One. Been to 2 races, went to one in Mexico City back in 2018 prior to COVID. Then I had the pleasure to go to the race in Abu Dhabi last year, where Max Verstappen took the title from Lewis Hamilton under questionable circumstances, might I add, but nonetheless, he is the world champion right now.
Here's a race car question for you. What's the fastest ever speed of a Formula One racing car?
Fastest speed? Wow. Are we talking like 250 miles an hour? What are we talking?
246.9 miles per hour.
That wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm. Pretty close. I hope you're not driving that fast, though.
I wish. I one of my goals in life is to get in a Formula One car and get on a track in Europe someday. So, zoom, zoom.
Well, CJ, it's time for the Mad Attack. Here's a collection of fast shots. Are you ready?
Hit me.
3 words to best describe yourself.
Happy, humble, excited.
Best thing about growing up in Connecticut?
I've had such good relationships with my friends that I still maintain to this day.
What was your favorite college course?
Ooh, American history.
Who's your biggest lacrosse influence?
That's a tough one, man. Wow. The thing is, I've taken so much from so many different games. If I had a name, Dan DiPietro, Ryan McClay, Tim Sher, or a couple of guys.
What is your favorite sports movie?
Any Given Sunday.
What's your favorite snack?
Welch's Fruit Snacks.
What did you want to be when you were little?
Firefighter, like my dad.
Favorite location you've traveled to?
Australia. Melbourne, Australia.
What does your favorite t-shirt say?
My favorite I like just solid colors. It's like this as an example. Mm-hmm. Something like this.
What is the strangest thing you've ever eaten?
Oof. Wow. I've eaten grasshopper before.
Ew. What celebrity would you like to meet?
I think Matthew McConaughey.
Have you ever used jumper cables?
Yes.
What would be your superpower?
Teleporting.
What's your favorite smell?
Beach.
What is your hype song?
Hype song? Oof. Usually anything Eminem related.
Are you a good driver?
I consider myself a good driver.
What's the last thing you bought?
Last thing I bought was a pair of sneakers. Union Passport sneakers.
How often are you asked if Brian Constable is your brother?
Quite often.
What's your biggest pet peeve?
Inconsiderate people.
Have you ever run a marathon?
God, no. The most I've ever run in my life is 3 miles. Continuous.
Are you good at fixing things?
I can.
Who makes you laugh?
Girlfriend.
And finally, work hard or play hard?
That's a combo, man. Gotta be both.
CJ, you're no stranger to championship moments. So now it's time for a very special segment. The first ever CJ Constable Lacrosse Award. This is an award presentation where we give you a category and you pick the winner.
Okay.
This could be anyone who played the game of lacrosse. Are you ready?
Yep.
Favorite attackman?
Favorite attackman, Casey Powell.
Favorite short stick midfielder?
Short stick midfielder, Will Haas.
Favorite long stick midfielder?
Brody Merrill. Who am I kidding?
Favorite defenseman?
Rob Dorr.
Favorite goalie?
Sal Acacio.
Favorite face-off specialist?
Jamie Hanford.
Favorite player to travel with?
Jared Newman.
Funniest teammate?
Jerry Raganese.
Best team spirit?
Mark Glick, Cassini.
Most competitive teammate?
Blaze Reardon.
Teammate who is the most fun?
Blaze Reardon.
Best locker room teammate?
Mark Lucini. Actually, no, Austin Powder. I take that back. Powder, by far.
Favorite field or stadium to play in?
Pepsi Center, Colorado Stadium.
Best style?
Jared Newman. They call him the top G for a reason.
Now it's time for the turnover. Do you have a question for me?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So what made you get into the booth? You got a knack for it. You got your technology and your brother, but what made you decide that you want to get behind the microphone? You know, you got a lovely voice for it, but what do we got here?
Well, these are lessons from the top. I want to share my experiences so young players can learn and grow the game. No. And RJ and Clark may need some help soon.
Hey, man, I like that. Listen, you know, you're not putting your resume out for the job, then, you know, what are you doing kind of thing? So
before we leave us today, I have two final questions. What is the best advice you've ever received as a player and who gave it to you?
Hard work works when talent doesn't work. Yeah, I said a couple of times. Jerry Walsh, I think, was the first person that mentioned that to me, though. He's Coach Brewster.
What advice would you give to a young player as they continue to play the sport?
When you think about the best advice I can give is that enjoy it, love it. Because if you don't, it's not going to work out for you. You know, you don't want to ever get burnt out. So, you know, if it does mean, you know, playing other sports to develop your skill set, to kind of change it up, But make sure you love it and that you're the one who's driving the boat, so to speak, as opposed to your parents.
And finally, finish his sentence. Lacrosse is?
Lacrosse is life?
CJ, thank you for spending time with us today. This was really fun. I really appreciate you sharing your experience and the love of the game with me and our audience. I look forward to seeing you back on the field, and I hope you'll join me again.
Absolutely, Matt. Appreciate the time, man. Awesome. Thank you.
Bye, CJ. See you soon. It's Matt. Go check out my website at mattonlax.com.